So last week, we asked you for stories about weird stuff you've won in raffles, sweepstakes, door prizes. And as usual, you delivered.
Whenever I got the email that I won, I laughed for like 45 minutes.
Those stories coming up. But first, a question inspired by a roadside encounter.
So a few weeks ago, I was driving to work and see the lottery billboard.
This is John Henry.
It's red, like most things are in Nebraska. Go Huskers. It has the Nebraska Powerball, and it's just this ridiculous amount, over $400 million or something. And it's like, what? How can the Nebraska lottery be just so much, right?
Right. Like, where does all this money come from?
Yeah. And the lottery's everywhere, but I literally know nothing about it.
Well, you're about to literally know something about it. Let me introduce you to Jonathan Cohen.
I have a microphone in my face. I'm assuming that's a good sign.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you?
He's doing a PhD on lottery history. He loves lottery history.
You're telling me that. I have a 250-page book about it.
And his lotto work grew out of a childhood love of board games.
That's like why I was interested in state lotteries in the first place.
What's your game?
Oh, God, this is like the nerdiest thing you could ever hear. Not like not as bad as Dungeons and Dragons, but like Terra Mystica or these like really complicated three-hour German board games.
Oh, man. Like those Euro games that end friendships?
Yeah, we're in good hands. Speaking of games that end friendships, Powerball. Here are the chances you'll win that $400 million you saw on the billboard.
The odds of winning are 1 in 252.2 million, which is approximately the same odds as if you took an ant and put it onto a football, two football fields. Okay, and you stab the football field or this double football field with a needle, the odds of winning the lottery is the same as hitting the ant. I mean, I hope that puts into perspective. It's you're never going to win. I hate to break it to you, but you're never going to win.
And this, of course, is one of the big criticisms of the lottery, that it preys on people.
Yeah, people putting their hard-earned money into something that is rigged against them. For every dream, there's a
jackpot. Yeah, and we're talking about a lot of people. So how many Americans do you think play the lottery regularly?
Millions? It's got to be millions.
85 million Americans buy a lottery ticket every week. That's 25% of America.
25% every week?
Mm-hmm.
50% do so at least once a year.
Whoa.
Lotteries are a $70 billion a year industry.
$70 billion?
It's more than sports, video games, music, movie tickets combined. And overall, sales keep growing.
At this point, for the last 20, almost 30 years, lottery officials have been able to say that their profits have increased every single year.
And so who's behind this? Who's profiting? Is it the state?
If you want to win the Maryland Weekly Lottery, you'll just have to buy some tickets in the Weekly Lottery. That's what Henry...
Yeah, the state runs it. And in terms of where the money goes, it varies state to state, but here's the rough breakdown.
All right, let's hear it. I've been waiting for this.
So if I bought a dollar lottery ticket in Nebraska...
6 cents of my lottery dollar is going back to the store that I bought it from.
Aha.
And then states hire private companies to run the lottery, and they get some money too.
It depends on the state, but approximately 10 to 15% is on administration costs.
So 10 to 15 cents goes to running the lottery. And then of that $1...
58 cents is going back to prizes.
And then the rest of that dollar goes back to the state where the ticket was purchased.
Nebraska, for example, it's 23% of the money is going to the cause that the lottery is supporting.
Like education or environmental efforts or the state fair or whatever part of the budget the lottery goes to. So the more lottery tickets the state sells, the more money it makes, which means that state governments have an incentive to get as many people as they can to gamble away their money on lottery games. Like many of the same state governments that have outlawed other forms of gambling.
That is so weird.
Lotteries and government is an odd couple.
Yeah, I think it's very fair. It's crazy that the state is in charge of it, that the state profits off of it, that the state runs it. It is a very weird thing that we've come to accept as a normal part of the American commercial landscape.
So how did we get here?
Yeah. How does this thing exist? How do we have a state-run gambling machine that one out of every four people use? I don't understand.
It's a great question. And John Cohen, our historian, like most historians, wanted to start at the beginning.
Literally at the feet of the cross, when following the crucifixion, there's like a drawing of lots.
Yeah, there was gambling at the crucifixion for Jesus's clothes. But that's too far back, so let's fast forward.
What we now know as Lotto or Powerball dates in its earliest form to China in the 10th century.
No, still too far back.
The colonization of the United States in the 1600s was made possible through lottery gambling.
What? Wait, is that true?
Yes.
Some of those expeditions to Jamestown, the first permanent English settlement in America, were funded by lotteries in England. And then the early settlers were into lotteries too. They used lotteries to raise money for roads and bridges and hospitals and even the Revolutionary War.
Got to get those muskets somewhere.
Lotteries were so commonplace and so interconnected with the government from the very earliest days that organizations that wanted to have a lottery got their lottery props from the government.
The state government would own like the wheel, like the lottery wheel that you'd put in, that you take the balls out of or the raffle tickets out of, and they would loan it to you.
Lotteries were a great way to get money from a people whose whole thing was being tax averse. Games of chance were a winning alternative.
There seems to always have been an appetite in the United States for gambling.
An appetite that lots of people tried to suppress. From the 1700s to the early 1900s, you have religious groups fighting against lotteries, the temperance movement against lotteries. Corruption starts to plague lotteries. And in response, states make lotteries illegal. Like by the early 1900s, there are no state-sanctioned lotteries. So they are illegal, but not dead. Lotteries move underground, the mob gets involved, and states start to make the argument.
If people are going to gamble anyway, if that's true, and that if the mob is currently making money off gambling, then the state might as well just take it over and make that money instead.
Well, it's like legalizing marijuana or something, right? Like,
right, exactly. The belief that it's going to happen anyway and that the state should just get a cut.
And in 1963, one state decides to take that cut.
New Hampshire has this whole live free or die attitude.
And New Hampshire's like, we're bringing the lottery back.
The New Hampshire town of Salem goes down in history as the scene of the first legalized sweepstakes in the U.S. as 11 horses get away in the race.
But the lottery game that they settle on is so convoluted.
It looks totally different from what we have now. What you did was you bought a lottery ticket, and instead of just buying a ticket, you...
For complicated tax reasons, New Hampshire has to tie the game to horse racing. And the result is just, like, preposterous.
Paper slicer, where half of the ticket would go into this drum, half of it you'd get to keep, and then random sets of tickets would be drawn, but those tickets didn't win. Those tickets were each connected to a different horse in a horse race.
What?
And then there was another drawing as to which horse race would be the lottery winner based on, and then...
It sounds like when the mob ran the lottery, it was, like, a lot cooler. It was, like, a lot more user-friendly than when the government ran it.
There's room for improvement, to be sure. And that improvement starts to come a few years later when the Steve Jobs of lotteries enters the scene. I want you to help me imagine him. He's like just out of grad school. It's 1973. He's in his late 20s.
It probably has some circular glasses and a cool beard, probably. Maybe some bell bottoms.
Yeah, like maybe a hippie.
Well, I certainly wasn't a hippie, but I was certainly thinner than I am now, so.
So he was a square, but a thin square, so he's a rectangle.
That's a brilliant dad joke.
Well, I'm a dad, so.
What do you want to know about him?
Well, I want to know his name.
Okay, it's... John Koza, K-O-Z-A.
That's a cool name.
And when John gets into this business, a mere 8 states had lotteries, including New Hampshire. Sales weren't that good. They'd plateaued. The games are kind of dull. The drawings happen only infrequently. But Koza has an idea to change up the game, to make it more exciting to play. And he gets his inspiration from a previous job he had making instant games for gas stations and supermarkets.
In the 60s, there was a whole craze of trading stamps And anytime you'd go to the supermarket, you'd get a game ticket.
Match three gas pumps and you win right on the spot. Instant gratification.
We took the basic idea of instant gratification and moved it into the state lottery arena.
John Koza invented the scratch-off ticket.
Ah, that's cool.
So he and a business partner start a company called Scientific Games. They sell the idea to the Massachusetts State Lottery in 1973, and they print the very first scratch-off ticket.
Tickets were, frankly, much prettier than they are today because they were all printed on aluminum foil, so they had a shine to them. And if, of course, if you'd splatter some yellowish ink on the aluminum foil, it would look like gold.
So when they were first released, did the public have to be convinced?
No. The first week of sales, there were long lines of people.
It's like the iPhone just came out or something.
It was just a huge success.
The sales for scratch tickets were three or four times higher than the previous lottery tickets. Scratch ticket fever starts to spread, but the market is limited because not all states have a lottery. So Koza tries to drum up business through a strategic and widespread lobbying campaign.
We started going around to states around the country, Arizona and Oregon and California, and saying this is how much money you could raise if you had a lottery.
Scientific Games sets up local pro-lottery organizations with names like Californians for Better Education and Arizonans for Tax Reduction.
They're really smart. They pick the best, like a cause that's really poignant in each state. So in Colorado, all the money goes to parks.
Uh-huh. And they say it's free money for your state for something that people want to do anyway.
Right. And it works. More and more states legalize the lottery, and Scientific Games makes tens of millions off of new contracts.
So in the early 1980s, this company, Scientific Games, basically single-handedly restarts the spread of state lotteries in the United States.
And a couple years later, there's another lotto innovation that relates to the billboard that you saw. States figure out that if they pool their prize money, they can get bigger jackpots and entice more people to play. So the first multi-state lottery is born, and guess which company administered it?
We won the contract to do it.
At the time, it was called Lotto America, was its original name. And then in the early 90s, it becomes what we now know today as Powerball.
So, John Henry, the next time you drive by that red, go Huskers, Powerball billboard.
Yeah, I'll be thinking about John.
While you're thinking about him, he has a new project these days. John Koza is on a mission to change the way we elect the president of the United States. And he's using the strategies he learned while working on the lottery.
What? This guy.
His project was in the news this week.
Connecticut would join a group of states that would pool their electoral college votes together for the presidential candidate who wins the popular vote.
He wants to get the president elected by popular vote. So he's going state to state to try to get them to assign their electoral college votes to whoever wins the popular vote rather than the winner of the state's vote. And he's using the same legal strategy that he used in the first multi-state lottery. It's called an interstate compact.
Oh, yeah. I mean, had I not been involved in the lotto, I would not have even been aware of interstate compacts and probably never thought of the idea of a national popular vote.
So the lottery government relationship status remains. It's complicated.
The connection to the Electoral College, that is just so strange.
He's been working on it since 2006. 11 states are on board, mostly Democratic, and Connecticut's legislature just passed it this month.
It seems like he just has this ability to understand how systems work enough to be able to make change.
Yeah, we'll see with this endeavor. The experts we talked to said it was a long shot, but probably better odds than stabbing an ant with a needle over two football fields. After the break, the bizarre things that you have won in raffles.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Dee. I hear you won something unusual.
So there's a story here.
We have to go on a little journey.
I'm ready.
A few years ago, Chipotle celebrated their 20-year anniversary as a company. and they put on a little promotion called Adventurito.
Adventurito?
Like the burrito adventure.
Every burrito from Chipotle is an adventure, in my opinion. But go ahead.
So every day, somebody would win a year's supply of burritos. So I didn't win any of those. But at the end of it, if you did all 20 days, you got entered into a drawing to win 20 years. And that's what I won.
20 years of burritos.
One per week. That's their advised limit, I guess. One per week.
Let's do the math.
52 per year.
Times 20 years. That is 1,040 burritos in burrito winnings.
I have like 17 more years of free burritos from Chipotle.
How do you collect your winnings? I'm imagining they send you burritos in the mail.
No, once a year I get a little box and there's a little ribbon wrapped around it and there's a wax seal and then you open it up and there are these gift cards inside.
I feel like there's a world in which 1,000 burritos from Chipotle is not exactly a prize.
I mean, in some ways, because it's like so much food. But I get them in November, so that's right before Christmas.
No.
So like, I don't have...
D, no. Mm-mm.
No, people ask for it, right? So they're like,
no,
can
they
you
don't.
Just give me like two... Yes, they do. They do. Like, it's like an expected thing now.
Good luck with the next 17 years of burritos. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Hello, this is Lisa.
Hey, Lisa, can you beat 1,000 burritos?
Well, I won a barn.
A barn? How big a barn are you talking about?
You definitely couldn't house livestock in there, like, you know, sheep or horses, but I imagine you could make it into a pretty swanky chicken coop.
How old were you when you won a barn?
I was in my late teens. At the time, I was, you know, into belly dancing and snowboarding and playing video games. So.
And barns? Were you also into barns?
Well, I'm not into barns, but my dad is, so it went to my dad.
Winning a barn didn't change the course of your life. You weren't like, you know what, now that I have a barn, I think I do want to pursue farming.
It's hilarious you should say that, because at the time, I was not into it, but I am now a chicken owner, urban farmsteader, so... Modern me would love to have that barn. Hello?
Okay, Megan, we've got 1,000 burritos in a barn. What can you do for us?
So when I was in high school, as a custom, when you turn 18, you obviously go straight to the gas station and get your first scratch off.
Not cigarettes.
No. I was raised in the Bible Belt. We do not smoke. So we get the scratch-offs, and I was no scratch-off novice because every Christmas we got shotgun shells, scratch-offs, and fireworks.
You knew your way around scratch tickets.
Had my quarter already, and I scratch it off, and I won $100. And there started my rise.
Your rise. Let me get this straight. Your first scratch ticket that you purchased yourself, you won $100.
Yes. And then I bought another one and won $50.
The same day?
Yeah. Do you know how many gas station snacks you can buy? I was the queen. But it started then, and I just would, like, feel it in my chest and be like, yeah, today I'm going to get a scratch off. And then I go get one and win every time.
Shut up.
Yeah, I won $200. I mean, my mom is my witness. The most entertaining one, I won 7 of them in a row. Me and my friends were like, drooling, laughing at like, this is not real. I cannot be stopped. This is not real. But I started winning so many that I would keep them in my car as like backup money.
You had like a savings account of scratch tickets.
Yeah.
Do you still play?
Every once in a while, yeah. I do have a $15 winner in my car right now for just in case money.
For a rainy day. Thanks to everybody who called. Before we go, Father's Day is coming up, and we are planning an all-dad episode. Wall-to-wall dad, and we need your help. We're looking for untested hypotheses that your dad is certain of. Also looking for dadersticians, old dad's tales, call us and tell us about them, 347-464-9626.
Every Little Thing is produced by Phoebe Flanagan, Aaron Reese, Zakia Gibbons, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Ian Chillog is our consulting editor. Scoring by Dara Hirsch and Bobby Lord. Mixing by Dara Hirsch. Thank you for listening. I think you are a winner. Goodbye.